Blog Talk Radio.
It's a Gridiron Stud Show and a promo that's got the flow. Football knowledge from toe to toe with Amo, Calamino, and the other host. You already know Chad Wilson brings you the show. Dial us up, give us a call. We're waiting here to talk some ball. 347-633-9365 is the number to call. So don't sit around, no time to stall. Giving you football from wall to wall. And now we give you our two hosts, Amo and Chad, with your breakfast toast. Welcome to the Gridiron Stud Show, Monday edition, weekend wrap edition. Wow, Amo Calamino, what a wild weekend. It started for me Friday night, rolled into Saturday afternoon. My goodness, a Pepto-Bismol kind of weekend for me, Amo.
Yeah, you had a couple close calls, but when you win, they're fun.
Yeah, oh, definitely. They both worked out the way that you hoped, but my goodness, it took every last second of both games. And what I'm talking about is Friday night, as you know, most of our listeners know, I'm a defensive coordinator and coach at American Heritage High School, and we had a rematch in the second round of the playoffs against Cardinal Gibbons. I'm on record for saying I really do hate rematches. If you won the first one, very, very difficult to beat a very good football team twice in the same season, as many NFL teams find out every year, as some college football teams find out. And so we had that situation and ended up being a 10-7 football game, a defensive struggle, a defensive battle. Actually, Cardinal Gibbons scored their 7 points on our offense as we fumble a ball when we had our backs against the wall in the end zone, fumble a ball into the end zone, and they recovered it, making it a 7-3 game at the time. And then offense got their act together, got physical, drove the ball straight down the field in the fourth quarter, punched it in, and then defense was on the field twice at the end of the game and pulled it off that way. So that was Friday. Saturday, travel to Baton Rouge really early in the morning for a 12 o'clock start out in Louisiana as LSU played a road game in their stadium. Figure that one out. But nevertheless, Florida's there in some home orange in Baton Rouge, in Tiger Stadium. And that one is knuckle-to-knuckle all the way down, Amo, to the last yard and last second. And, you know, by now everyone's seen it. LSU lines up for that final play. It's their signature play in their offense, turn around, toss to the running back. And, you know, it's very difficult to stop LSU from getting a yard with, you know, their offense, their offensive line, and their running backs. But somehow, some way, Florida's defense came up with the stop, and it was bedlam, at least in the Florida section right there. And Florida, with that win, clinches the SEC East and crushes the hopes of the Tennessee fans that have been less than less than professional. But I can't
classy.
Even say that for fans.
They didn't keep it very classy.
No, for 5-6 weeks now, whatever it's been since Florida played Tennessee, the Volunteer fans have been all over Florida fans and players, predicting that they would still win the East, even though they had taken a couple of losses after beating Florida. And they were pretty damn sure Florida was going to lose to LSU and set things up for them.
Well, I'll tell you, the way the game ended up there, obviously, not just the last drive. If you watch that game, for folks out there, I don't know how much, you know, the audience watched the Florida LSU game. The Florida defense won that game hands down, not just on the obvious last drive. LSU made 5 trips into the red zone in that game and came away with 10 points. So, you know, that was clearly the Florida defense stepped up. And, you know, the offense did enough, I guess, to you know, help the defense. But really, that was the defense that won that game.
Yeah, I mean, outstanding defensive performance, kind of what you would expect between these two teams. The defense is headline. You know, LSU and Florida are a lot more similar than people care to realize. You know, conservative, I guess, is the word you could use offensively, kind of put things on the shoulders of the defense, and both teams really, really did that. And then,
I mean, it was predictable, so much so that on Friday's show, if you dial up the archive, I said, yeah, this game will be a 17-13 game. Someone will win it.
Yeah, great call by you. Ends up 16-10. I mean, pretty damn close to how it went down. And so it ended up being a defense needing to make a stop at the end, and that's exactly what happened. So in the aftermath,
let me ask you a question about LSU before we get off this game and move along here talking football, because there's a lot to talk about. You know, I know LSU keeps getting, what do you call them, charity points in the polls for their schedule, because they're 6-4 right now. And, you know, you go down their schedule, they lost to, you know, the number 7 or 8 team in the country, whatever poll you're looking at. Wisconsin beat them in the opener 16-14. They lost that game against Auburn where the call was at the end and they reviewed it and they didn't, what, the guy wasn't in. They lost 18-13. Alabama beat them 10-0, and, of course, Saturday's game. I understand that there's some tough losses there, but at what point do you stop giving them credit for you know, close? Usually that only counts in, like, horseshoes and hand grenades. I mean, I'm looking at the rest of the schedule here, and I'm saying, well, they got wins against Jacksonville State, Mississippi State, Missouri, Southern Miss, a bad Ole Miss team, as we found out at this point. They're not very good. And finally, Arkansas. I'll give them credit. That was a nice win on the road. But, I mean, yeah, they have a lot of close calls, but don't you have to win some of those before we give them credit?
I guess, but you know, there's been more of a emphasis put on you know, toughness of schedule, I've noticed this year in the rankings, maybe more than any other year, and so they're going to continue to get credit for that. They've got another tough game on Thursday against Texas A&M, and you know, depending on what happens there, one of these two teams is out of the top 25. And may be so for the remainder of the year, unless they do something spectacular in the bowl game. But I guess, you know, when Florida lost to Arkansas, they were all the way out of the top 25. And I guess I can understand that because their schedule not as tough as LSU. So I guess one more week is the answer to your question. They get one more week.
It's not a huge question that's going to keep any of us up at night. I'm just always curious. I mean, I give a lot of points for strength of schedule, and had they won one or two of those games I noted, I'm saying, okay, they got a big win in there and a couple tough losses, but at some point you have to me, I say, well, yeah, that's great. You're close at the end, and you always figure out a way not to win, but at the end of the day, can you win one of them before I give you credit for it? That's all I'm saying. I mean, yeah, it's a very difficult schedule. You know what's nice about that whole section of the Southeast Conference? There's four good teams there that have a great rivalry because of proximity. LSU, obviously Louisiana, the Mississippi schools, Arkansas, and South Texas with A&M. So this A&M-LSU game, really, you know, now that they're in the same conference, is a rivalry game. I mean, those schools are close enough that's going to be very hard for LSU to get up for that game, I think.
Well, that's a big thing about football in the South in general. A lot of these schools are close together as opposed to when you head out west. And I just know that from doing the recruiting trips. You know, once you start up and you head out of Florida, you're going to bump into a bunch of SEC schools, which we've often done. You go to Georgia, you can hit LSU, you can hit Auburn and Alabama and Tennessee and LSU and all of these schools. And you could do it in a week. You can almost hit the whole damn Pac-10, and I mean the whole SEC in 10 days if you wanted to. So,
that's kind of why I'm, not just the quality of the football. It's always drawn me to liking to watch SEC games is the way the East and the West are situated. They actually make geographical sense, and the games I just highlighted in the West are basically all rivalry games, you know, with Auburn and Alabama filling out the rest of those teams I talked about. And then you go to the East, and of course, like you said, you've got Florida, Georgia, and Tennessee right there. So I like the way the conference is laid out. The Pac-12 is more in pods. I mean, in other words, I call it the California pod, where you have USC, UCLA, Stanford, and Cal. All those games are good rivalry games. You've got the Pacific Northwest pod, where you have the Washington and Oregon schools. And then you have what is the Great Southwest pod, where you have the Arizona schools with Utah and Colorado. So really, it's more in that conference because it's so spread out. You got four pods that make up the 12 versus the SEC, where they're kind of nicely split geographically, and you have some great rivalry games. Just a little.
Yeah, well, Florida and LSU is certainly not the only interesting thing that went on in college football today, and we'll get to all of those things. And our next segment, as well as, NFL football, plenty of things to talk about. Your Cowboys continue to do great things. The Seattle Seahawks are starting a surge in college football. You know, there were some records broken. There were some things done, and We do need to talk about a top five. You know, I noticed, Emil, that there, you know, what matters is the college football 14 playoff, but a lot of people want to debate the top five and six. I've noticed those two numbers being the things that people want to talk about. So you and I will be able to do that in the next segment.
Okay.
Yeah.
We can do whatever you want to do. You're in charge here.
Oh, is that right? I'm in charge. Well, it's a good thing. And yeah, we'll talk about some of the other individual performances, some strange things that go on in college football from week to week that, you know, draw my attention. But nevertheless, there are some things on in both college and NFL football that we need to talk about. There was a game last night, Emil, and I'm not sure what to make of what's going on up there in Wisconsin. And we're talking about the national football franchise that hails from that state. Things are just starting to fall completely apart up there, and we're going to have to talk about it. I think it's something we've kind of seen coming, but not to these levels. I'm a little surprised by just how far the wheels have fallen off the wagon up there at Green Bay. So I don't know where they go.
Yeah, well, I noticed that. We'll talk about that, I guess, in that segment when we get to it. But, man, there's some things I know I kind of mentally jotted down. I wanted to go over with you and the audience and see what you get your thoughts on it. But it's more than just the defense there, and the defense has its issues with injuries and just poor performances. But there's more going on there than just the defense.
Yeah, it seems. And so they're gonna need some doctors, some head doctors up there to kind of figure out what's going on with the Packers franchise. Charlie Strong, it's since 1938. It's been that long. It's been that long since Kansas football could say they beat the Texas Longhorns, and that's happened. It happened on Saturday, and Charlie Strong has, you know, not survived that. We all knew this was coming, but this kind of put the exclamation point on Charlie Strong's tenure at Texas. So he's going to be out of there. They're going to have him coach the final game. You agree or disagree with that?
If he was, you know, up for doing it, which I'm assuming he had a say in it, because obviously they're not going to want a malcontent coaching the game. I think the kids probably like him. And would want to go out and play hard for him that game. I have a prediction for Charlie Strong. I think his next gig, wherever, if he picks the right job, he's going to learn a lot from this. And I think Charlie Strong eventually is going to be a really good head coach. And to the point you've always made, I think he learned something from this. And among a lot of things he learned, but I think he learned picking the right job is almost as important as what you do when you get there.
Oh,
and
absolutely.
I think he picked the wrong job. Yeah.
And if he spent any time talking to his buddy Urban Meyer, he's probably the best at doing that. So I'm sure they've had some phone conversations or, you know, some face-to-face conversations. And I think Charlie Strong's going to be very careful about that next opportunity. Maybe that's something we could do during the college football segment that's coming up. We'll play program and hire some college coaches. We'll fix up the carousel. We'll make everything right, and we'll have to do that when we get back on the Gridiron Stud Show. Stay with us. College Football Talk is coming up here on the Gridiron Stud Show. We'll be right back.
Sure, summer's gone, winter's here, but that doesn't mean everyone's putting their t-shirts away. Whether it's the company recreational basketball team, the youth soccer league for the kids, or the Halloween party your buddy throws every year, t-shirts are as much a part of the American culture as Tom Brady deflating footballs. Screen-printed t-shirts are costly when done for small groups. They're limited in color unless you want to pay even higher prices. More colors, more costly. The answer? Do it yourself at home with your inkjet printer and a hand iron. Whether it's your 7-on-7 team, your child's birthday party, or the family reunion, you can do it yourself and they'll look great. That's right, with heat transfer paper sold at tshirtsupplies.com, you can design your own logos, you can do the wording, whatever you want, print it on your own inkjet paper sold by tshirtsupplies.com, and iron it on with your own hand iron. The design or pictures you put on your t-shirts are limited only by your own imagination and creativity. If you dream it up and design it, the paper sold at tshirtsupplies.com can get it onto your t-shirt. By the way, don't worry if you haven't done it before. As T-Shirt Supplies has first-rate customer service, they'll help you get the right paper for your project and steer you in the right direction. Visit them at tshirtsupplies.com. That's T-Shirt, no hyphen, supplies plural, all one word, .com. Or call them at 1-877-857-2737. It's 1-857-85-PAPER. T-ShirtSupplies.com. Go there now. Are you a property owner or want to be one, but you don't have time for property management? Then get an MVP on your team. Who has time for the letting process, for arranging inventories and organizing pre-tenancy cleaning, dealing with deposit negotiation and negotiating with service suppliers and maintenance? No one's got time for that. MVP does, though. Get this MVP on your team. You can rely on MVP Property Management to offer you an extreme amount of quality and professional services for your money. And because they know that everyone is different, they pride themselves in providing a professionalized service to each and every one of their clients. So how do you get this MVP on your team? It's simple. Pick up the phone and call right now. 844-696-8722. That's 844-MY-MVP-CC. Or send an email to info@mymvp.cc. Get this MVP on your team and start winning today. To all you high school recruits out there, you want to get recruited by the colleges? Step up and visit GridironStuds.com today. We got college coaches visiting. We've got people visiting. We've got fans visiting. If you want to be seen, get your video up there right now. It's easy. Create a profile. Takes 2 minutes. Stop playing games. Get off of Facebook. Take control of your future. GridironStuds.com is where you need to be today. Visit now. Set your profile up and let yourself be seen.
All right, we're back here on the Gridiron Stud Show. College football was running wild. College football over NFL football right now. Emil, we still there? Is that where we're at?
Yeah, I mean, by and large, I think if you're just looking for a slate of games and you don't have a rooting interest, I think you've a better chance of finding something that piques your interest in the college game. Although, you know, the NFL, like I said to you on the show Saturday, there's a few games, I think, every weekend that we're interested in the NFL. But then because of the way the league is, with a lot of it just kind of mushed in the middle there, you get a lot of games where, unless you're a fan of that particular team, I think you find yourself kind of like not drawn to them maybe. You know, you're just sitting there going, okay.
This weird stat that this is the first time every team playing on Thanksgiving in the NFL this weekend will be at or above 500 since 1993. I guess that's a good thing.
That's a great. I mean, I was just saying that it's funny. Before we got on air, I was talking to a buddy, and I said, you know, boy, for once we've got a nice slate of games for Thanksgiving. So that's pretty cool. You know, we're gonna have three really good football games throughout the day, or at least which should be good football games. So that's something to look forward to. And the college game, as you mentioned earlier, we have Texas A&M playing LSU. There's a really good college game at night. So we have some good football ahead of us with our turkey and burping.
Yeah, well, there you go. On Saturday, Emil, Dalvin Cook became the all-time leading rusher at Florida State. Rushed for 225 yards in a game against Syracuse. He did so in less of amount of time than the previous record holder, Warwick Dunn, did. Warwick took 4 years, and there's still games left for Dalvin Cook to play. You know, he's third all-time in the ACC. I don't know if he'll catch the number one guy, but he's averaged more yards per season than any other ACC running back. Right now, Emil, is Dalvin Cook the best running back in college football?
I think both the best running back in college football and a lot of people will fight me on this. I think the best pro prospect. As good as Fournette is at LSU talent-wise, he seems to get dinged up a little bit. Now, I don't know if that's just bad luck or that's going to be his history moving forward in the NFL, but I just,
I think,
you
some
know,
of that
for
is
usage as
also, the way he's used at LSU. I mean, they really
sure
use the hell out of tailbacks over there, so.
Yeah, well, you ain't drafting him and not using the hell out of him in the NFL. I mean, you know, he's going to be a bellwether, a guy that size, that kind of speed. He's going to be an Ezekiel Elliott, and if you can't handle 25 carries a game, I'm just, you know, I'm telling you, his usage is not going to go down. And Cook, I mean, I think he can do so many things to hurt you on a field. You know, he's good in the passing game. He's tough. He's got speed. I love
just
that kid's
like
game.
Ezekiel Elliott, to be honest with you. That seems like the same exact
yeah
back to me.
Yeah. The only thing I can't comment on him, that I just, because I don't watch them enough to understand, you know, maybe you could, and you'll watch a little bit probably of film going into the game this week. I don't know what he does in pass protection. I mean, if he's good at blitz pickup and that kind of stuff, because that's important in the NFL.
Hot and cold,
you know, a lot of rookie.
Hot and cold. He's not consistent there. He'll have his games where he's not into it for whatever reason. Then there are times he'll just stone a guy and have a good game in pass protection. So it's, you know, there's an area of weakness. There's some inconsistency there, but he more than makes up for it with the rest of his game.
Oh yeah, to me, if I'm, you know, I was gonna point this out to you. Over the years, we've always diminished the value of the running back, and we can talk about this more in our NFL segment. But go take a look this year.
They've returned to that
amount of the amount of running backs that are probably going to have 1,000-yard seasons. Now, keep in mind, for those of you out there, last year, and it's only because I know this off the top of my head, Darren McFadden was fourth in the league in rushing. He had 1,089 yards. That's not going to be the case this year. There's not going to be – you're going to look, and I bet you we're going to have – if nobody gets any injuries here, we're probably going to have 10 guys, I'm going to say, go over 1,000 yards this year.
And you know, you brought this up early. I don't remember if it was just in our conversations or if it was actually brought up on air, but there is a return to the running game. They've finally seen the light. I guess, you know, defenses – have adjusted to the whole spread out, throw the ball around offense, much to the chagrin of an Aaron Rodgers, and folks are returning to the ground game. It always ends up coming back to that. We've had our fads, Emil, as long as you and I have watched the game. We've had our fads where teams want to jump in. There's always the genius passing game attack scheme that comes out, and, you know, it's allowed to flourish for, you know, 4 years or so, and then there's the return back to the roots, which is you got to own the line of scrimmage, and I think we're starting to head back in that direction.
Well, and there's also that point is well taken. There's a couple other things that, you know, not that I'm telling you something you don't know. There's the yin and yang of the chess game. So you build rosters, and all of a sudden you got a lot of teams building rosters, you know, a la, say, the Seahawks, who we both enjoy watching playing for different reasons. But the Seahawks roster is really built to the NFL game as it's been, you know, constructed the last 10 years, which is with a lot of fast linebackers, guys that can, get, you know, run in space. So to me, and I've always said this, the kryptonite for the Seahawks, if you're going to go at them, is pound them. You got to be able to run. Now, that's easier said than done because they've got some talented defensive linemen, but you've got to go right at that defense, and a lot of NFL defenses are set up like the Seahawks where they're trying to look like them, you know, get guys that can run in space and cover people. And I think the chess match is you get GMs and coaches saying, well, that's great. You know, you want to play these small guys at linebacker? I'm going to start pounding you.
Yeah, I mean, what's a good landing spot for a Dalvin Cook, in your opinion? Forget
so
about
many
where he
at this
could
point.
Be taken.
I mean,
Where would you most like to see him so that he could have the kind of career that we all would hope he would have?
Yeah, well, let me put it this way. Here's where I think he could do well. Not that I'd want to see him there. How's that? Because I have a rooting interest. I think a guy like Cook would be such an addition to a team like the New York Giants. Mm-hmm. I watch the Giants play. I say to myself, this team is missing something. Yeah, they're 7-3. They've and all the wins count, but they're the most non-dominant 7 wins outside of Miami that I've seen. 7 wins by less than 8 points, less than 1 score. Biggest win of the year is a 7-point win against the Rams. Everything's tough for the Giants, and the reason that is, and I'm not criticizing because 7-3 is where you want to be at this point in the year, but everything's difficult because they just don't have a complete offense and it lacks that running game. And to me, a guy like him would really open things up for Eli Manning and Beckham and those guys.
Yeah, I'm one who really believes that. I know he's won a couple of Super Bowls, but without a running game, Eli Manning is as average as you can be as a quarterback. Give him a running game, then he turns into someone else. So I think that would have to be a priority for them. And either a Dalvin Cook or a Leonard Fournette would be a good addition. I've looked at some mock drafts, Emil, and I've seen Dalvin Cook a possibility to another NFC East team, and that's the Washington Redskins, who are flowing along pretty good right now and getting a lot out of their quarterback, Kirk Cousins.
Yeah, but they've got a lot of capital invested in that position already. You know, Matt Jones has done nothing to disappoint. Kelly last night looked good. I mean, I'm not sure, you know, they've got some issues to address on defense, so I think that they may, it could be. I mean, I don't know. If he falls to them, it could be. But I just think for them, I'd be more defensive if I was the Redskins oriented. I think they can move the ball just fine the way they're going. They ran it nice last night. I've looked at Manning this year, and I'm sure we'll get somebody pissed off on Twitter, but he is about as average as you can be, and that team is 7-3, not because of Eli Manning, almost despite Eli Manning this year. If you go look, he's tried to give away some games. That Monday night game he almost gave away. I mean, against Cincinnati.
Yeah,
which
I mean,
is we kind of
know what he is there. He needs that pressure taken off of him. With the running game. So we'll kind of see how that goes. But we're here to talk college football. Saturday night, we had a game. The number two team in the country, Ohio State's, Emil, they're starting to look a little Jekyll and Hyde-ish, if you ask me. Not what you expected from them. But you know what I also think? Michigan State may just be that matchup for Ohio State. I think what they do, especially defensively, creates a problem for Ohio State's offense. That's what I'm just boiling this down to.
Well, there's two things with Michigan State. Number one, I know they're in the middle of a wretched season, but it's a proud program. They are not a school the way they're coached that's just going to quit. Okay, so first of all, and they've got some players there. I mean, it's not like all of a sudden this roster went from winning 10, 11 games to 3 and all the players stink. Michigan State's been on the wrong end of some close games this year. They lost an overtime game against Indiana. A decent game against Michigan. They only lost by 9, a close one versus Illinois. So this is a team, number one, could probably have 4, 5, 6 wins. They seem to right the ship versus Rutgers, which everyone does, I know, but they drilled them 49-0. And they played really well Saturday. My concern with Ohio State and in this game that we're going to see on Saturday with Michigan is they seem to have two weaknesses that Michigan can exploit. One, their run defense is suspect in certain situations, as Michigan State proved on Saturday, and you don't need it. They didn't have a great quarterback opening things up for that running game. They just ran over them. And Barrett's been all over the map throwing the ball. I mean, his accuracy has not been great this year.
Yeah, it seemed to me, Emil, that both Ohio State and Michigan were distracted ahead of their big meeting this week. I mean, Michigan didn't look especially impressive against Indiana. And both teams, it's interesting that both teams looked unimpressive offensively. It wasn't the defenses. So perhaps they restricted themselves. I mean, there's film available of every game, but you know, what do you make of that? 17 points for Ohio State is usually in the 40s in a game like this. And Michigan at 20, when they too are also usually in the 40s in a game like this.
Yeah, but they ran out the new quarterback. The kid replacing Spieth. So I don't know. I mean, I think they're distracted ahead of a rivalry game like that. Sure. I also think that a lot of people, and again, Ohio State very well may win this game Saturday, but I think a lot of people are going to get sucked into this trap of Michigan lost their quarterback. They can't beat Ohio State. Michigan, not Alabama, as far as the numbers say, has the number one defense in the country. Alabama's number two, and they're within yards of one another. I know that I would take Alabama's defense. But my point is Michigan plays great defense. Whether they had their quarterback or not in this Ohio State game, they were not going to start throwing the ball over the yard. They're going to rely on the running game and the defense. So I don't get sucked into that. Michigan's quarterback's out. They can't win this game. I think they went very conservative versus Indiana. They ground out a win, and they got the hell out of there because they want to get ready for Ohio State. And I think Ohio State probably thought they could do the same thing, but that game got a little hairy for them.
Yeah, and to your point of getting sucked in, Emil, Ohio State is a 6.5-point favorite in this game on Saturday at high noon, by the way. They're 6.5-point favorites. You know, you get your 3 points in a game like this for being at home, but then there's another 3.5 points of cheese put on this thing. I mean, we're not picking games today, but line's a little heavy.
Yeah, I mean, I got to look at it. I mean, I got to see if we're missing something. But, I mean, you know, on the surface, like I said, I don't see why, you know, everybody wants to have their first quarterback at the end of the year. But I'm not thinking this game was ever going to be played with Michigan's quarterback going out there going 24-30 for 350 yards. That's just not the way I would see a Michigan game plan built for this particular opponent, not with the defense they have. And like I said, if Ohio State has – and Ohio State is a good defense themselves, but if they have issues, it is stopping the run. So I always felt this game would be won in the trenches, and that's how Harbaugh likes to win these games anyway. So we'll have to take a look at that as the week goes along, but it's an interesting matchup at high noon.
Off the top of your head, Amon, what was the most shocking result of any game you saw on Saturday or heard about Saturday?
Let me go down them in my mind here and see. Let's see.
I mean, I've got mine.
That really just – you've got yours? I mean, the biggest result that shocked me was earlier in the week, obviously, with what Houston did to Louisville. I was kind of taken aback by that.
Yeah.
Saturday. Well, I mean, hey, I'll be honest with you, not to throw too much sunshine up the Gator skirt, as they like to say, but that win at LSU, you know, as 14-point underdogs with the amount of injuries Florida came into that game with, to go on the road and win that game shows me something. I mean, let's not forget, they were 2-touchdown underdogs. It wasn't like there was a 4-point spread in that game. That
yeah, and while
a,
I would
a,
be
a very...
right there with you, I think I would have been had Oregon not gone to Utah and somehow beat the Utes. I mean, I can't even understand how the hell that happened. And then I can't figure out Utah. They've been a strange team for me this year, but that's, I don't
know. Well,
even
I'm going to tell you what's happened in that game. This is a case, you know, and here's the problem, both the beauty and the problem for a team like Utah. Utah doesn't have the talent on their roster per se to just overlook an opponent. Because if you look at Utah, generally, they're going to play defense. They're going to play do well in the specials. They're not going to turn the ball over. They play close. I mean, they beat BYU by 1. They beat SC in a comeback by 4. They lost by 5 at Cal. They won by 5 at Oregon State. They won by 7 against UCLA. They lost by 7 to Washington. You get the gist? Every game is right there with Utah. So if they're not going to be focused, a team like Oregon, who has been awful this year, can slip in there and catch them. I think Utah got caught already thinking about the matchup next week with Colorado, which they anticipated would be for the Pac-12 South title, which it will be, only if Colorado wins. So
exactly how that's going to go. I'm going to put the Pac-12 down as the wildest Power 5 conference this year. Just absolutely craziness going on there. Between Washington State's run, between Washington being stronger than everyone expected, to the way USC has turned things around, to UCLA's flop, to Utah and Oregon. I mean, just nothing, the most unpredictable conference all season long.
Well, you know what's interesting to me about that conference, and I contrast it with the SEC, I think most people generally year in, year out will tell you that they have them 1 and 2. I mean, sure, you can make arguments in certain years that maybe this year you slide the Big Ten up again over the Pac-12, although I'm not sure about that. Let's see if we get some bowl matchups. But what's interesting to me is, in the Pac-12, the schools that struggle, say like this year, California and Oregon, both 2-6 in the conference, they both went and beat Utah. Utah's got 3 losses, but 2 of them are schools like that. And I guess where I'm going with that is sometimes the bottom of this conference will step in and pull the upset, whereas in the SEC, I think it's so top-heavy that rarely do you see the Missouri's, Vanderbilt's, or Kentucky's win unless they're playing one another. If I'm making any sense to you.
No, I get that. But this, you know, I think it's been fun, to be honest with you. And I kind of want to see how this thing shakes out. Can some of these teams that have jumped up on the scene here sustain what it is they've been able to put together this year, Washington State being the most notable. I think Washington is kind of here for the long haul unless they lose Peterson somehow. But going to be.
You want to hear an interesting one? I just heard if the Pac-12 champion makes the playoff, which that would have to be Washington winning their last two games against Washington State and then the title game. If they make the playoff, the Rose Bowl is free to choose whomever they like. And they said there's a high probability that will be USC.
Yeah, wouldn't that be interesting? I mean, it's the right thing to do. Right now, USC is as hot as anyone in the country. And you can't hold the first part of this season against them. I mean, since your boy has become the quarterback, Arnold, this has been a totally different football team. So, yeah, I know you follow the conference closely. Lay this out for me. Lay it out for our listeners. What are the championship Pac-12 championship game scenarios, and which one is most likely in your?
It's actually not that complicated. It's actually a thing of beauty. With Utah's loss, it makes it much easier because there would have been a three-way tie had they beaten Colorado on Saturday. Had they not lost this previous Saturday, and that then you get into tiebreakers and everything else. But as it stands right now, top of the conference, we've got in the North Washington and Washington State. Sitting there at 7-1, they're going to play, I think it's Friday, I want to say. Is that game Friday, or have they moved it to Saturday? Anyway, they're going to play in the Apple Cup. Winner of that game wins the North Division, goes to the title game. In the South, USC's put a mark up. They're in the clubhouse, as they say in golf. They're 7-2, and they defeated Colorado earlier in the season, so they have the tiebreaker. Colorado's 7-1. They play 5-3 Utah at Colorado Saturday at 3:30, I believe that game is Eastern time. Colorado wins. They miraculously win the South, and McIntyre should get every coaching award this year. And they play Washington in the title game. They lose. We get a USC-Washington rematch in that title game.
What seems most likely here to you?
I think Colorado wins against Utah. They go, and I think – As well as they've played this year, I like Peterson in that matchup if Washington were to beat Washington State. That's a big if. I mean, you know, you don't know. Assuming Washington wins, I would take Washington over Colorado in that game. If I'm Washington and I can take care of my business Saturday, I'll be honest with you. If I'm them, I'm rooting for USC for one reason and one reason only. They could potentially win a game with Colorado, and because Colorado doesn't carry the name cachet, the way this shakes out in the playoff, they could end up on the outside looking in. I think if they were to beat Washington State, and assuming USC does what we think they'll probably do to Notre Dame, USC comes in at 9-3 on an 8-game winning streak. A win there for Washington to avenge their only loss would probably go a long way to getting them into that playoff.
Yeah, I'm not so sold that Colorado is just going to beat Utah. I mean, this loss that Utah suffered here might do something for them. And if it does anything positive, Colorado's probably in big trouble in that contest.
You think so? Because my question there is this, and I know we both like Kyle Whittingham's a good coach. I mean, you can't deny what he's done at Utah. I mean, yes, they've produced some nice pro players, but generally up and down the roster, they're not as talented as the USC's and UCLA's in the South as far as professional talent. I'm wondering what the mindset is of the team. Now, I'm going to give him some points for being a great coach, and I hope he gets them straight as someone who wants my team in the championship game. But can he get them straight for a game that they thought would be for the division title? Because if they had won their last two, they had the tiebreakers. They were going to be the South representative against the North. Now they're out of that going into the game. How do you get that team right for that game, I guess, is my question.
Yeah,
to you.
You know, just somehow make them realize, and they should realize this on their own, just how angry they should be about what went down last week. Obviously thinking ahead, so they got caught with the proverbial pants down. But I think they come into this thing motivated. But what an opportunity for Colorado. All right, and I promise we'd do this, so we're going to do it. Hey, well, let's start talking about some jobs that are going to be open or that we think are going to be open in college football when this season's over, because we're getting around that time of year. I think by next Monday, there's going to be some even more clear things done here. But right now, we do know Texas is open and LSU is open. Let's play the game where we guess all the other schools that are going to need head coaches when this season is over. I think it's safe to say Houston. Can we say that?
Well, yeah, the dominoes should fall, and I think it's pretty clear right now. I mean, the only people who, you know, is there anybody who follows football that doesn't realize that there's probably a 99% chance that Herman is the next coach at Texas? So, yes, Houston will need a coach.
Even though I've heard this report that they're trying to put together, the boosters at Houston are trying, like all hell, to put together major, major money for Herman to try and keep him and to build the facility that he so wants so that he, you know, has convinced them that's needed so they can compete for national championships. I'm not really buying
that. Well,
Houston,
by the way, that school has a ton of money down there. The money, I think, is not going to be the issue. Here's what – if I'm him, if I'm going to play this out, I'm going to get max money, first of all. Then once I get that, I want some kind of commitment from Houston that they're going to bust their tail to get into the Big 12.
Well, I think that's not on them. I'm sure they would do any and everything to get into the Big 12. It's the Big 12 and those people there that make decisions which make me scratch my head have decided not to bring on two teams, let alone a Houston.
Yeah, because if you look at, you know, we've talked about this anymore, conferences really don't get – the way they're laid out is not geography. It's laid out by television markets, okay? When the Big 12 lost A&M to the SEC – what the SEC gained was the South Texas market, which they wanted over there because it piggybacked nicely, as I spoke about in the last segment, with LSU and Arkansas. It all ties together nicely for them now. And they got Missouri to go up into the Midwest. Well, you look at the Big 12, right? They have a giant air ball in that market, so to speak. I mean, they've got North Texas corralled with TCU and Texas and Baylor. And they've got West Texas with Texas Tech, and then, you know, Oklahoma is kind of almost North Texas. South Oklahoma is just right there in that, you know, Metroplex area. They have nothing down there. To me, Houston makes perfect sense. They replaced Texas A&M in that TV market. I don't get it.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's not the discussion that we've got here, but apparently they're trying to put that money together.
No, but I'm trying to tell you what I would do if I'm Herman to stay there. I'm not staying there to keep playing in that conference.
I don't think Houston's going to be able to compete with Texas money and whatever they throw his way, and it just kind of seems like that's where Herman's going to end up. So Texas, Houston, LSU. I'm going to throw FSU in there. I'm going to throw FSU in the mix, and you know why? I think, and it's been reported, rumor, of course, that Jimbo Fisher is the number one guy on LSU's list.
I'm going to tell you, the only reason I'm hesitant to say that is it's got to be a pure money play for him, because at this point, if you look at his roster and the, you know, the ages and the guys playing right now, I dare say he might have his most talented teams in the next couple of years.
I would say this. You had a Heisman Trophy winner. You won the national championship and a Heisman Trophy with this guy. You've had the best running back in the school's history. Currently in all of college football, you're going to lose that as well. I don't know that you can get better than that. And you had both of those guys. You had the best running back and quarterback on your team at the same time, and now they're gone. Man, Amo, these things are almost like once-in-a-lifetime thing. I've told you about how coaches need to leave when you have a Heisman Trophy winner at quarterback and you win a national championship. Time to move on, set up shop elsewhere. I just feel like that might be the move for Jimbo Fisher, but we're neither here or there.
Okay,
you know,
well,
one job
that
I know is going to be open.
What's that?
Arizona. I mean, Rich Rod's not staying there. They're not keeping him there. It's just not going to happen.
Well, first of all, I think we should focus on the four, because Arizona is going to be open. Rich Rod, you're right, he's not staying. But us trying to prognosticate the Arizona coach, because let's face it, Arizona's probably going to get a guy, an up-and-comer, in one of the other five conferences that's, you know, made his mark, and, you know, either the MAC or, you know, the Mountain West, they're going to steal somebody like
Western
that.
Western Michigan's,
you know,
coach, maybe?
Maybe, something like that, exactly. You know, could be that. But I think that's hard. I think for us, where I'd like to focus is, okay, let's move the dominoes, as you suggest. Herman goes to Texas, which seems pretty obvious at this point.
Hey, in the interest of good radio, Amal, I think we need to start throwing some names out of some schools who, you know, people may not be talking about losing a coach, but there's a possibility. Let's play that game, and then we could.
You want? Well, let's go by conference. Let's go straight down the big conferences. You take a look at the Atlantic and the ACC. Give me a coach there. Is anybody on? I mean, Syracuse just hired a coach. I can't see Boston College getting any, you know, getting rid of anybody. I think everybody in that.
No, as
side
I fly through this conference,
probably,
you know what? Since they kind of have semi half a foot in the conference, Notre Dame. I've said this all year long. It just seems like Brian Kelly's been coaching in a kind of a way where he's distracted perhaps about another opportunity somewhere. I'm not convinced he's there at the end of the year.
No, I agree with you. I didn't think so at first, but I watched him. I was in a sports bar when that game ended. I had left my house, did a couple things with my wife, and we stopped in a place to eat then. And, you know, it was 31-21 Notre Dame, and I get there and I see him walking off the field in that loss. And that was just a bad loss, and he had the look of a guy – it's probably too strong for me to say didn't give a damn, but he didn't look as upset as I would expect him to be. He didn't have veins popping out of his neck or anything. He kind of just looked resigned to the fact that he just doesn't think his team's that good, or as you say, he's maybe going someplace else. But that was a bad home loss. Get outscored 13-0 in the fourth quarter and lose at home when you take a 10-point lead in.
We're going to lob Notre Dame onto the firewood right here, and then I don't see anything else in the ACC that's pressing that could possibly happen. If anything else happened, we'd be shocked. Sliding over to the Big 12, Amal, look, we all talked about what happened to Charlie Strong. Thoroughly embarrassing. You lose to Kansas for the first time, and I don't know. You do the math, however long 1938 was ago. But a worse thing, I think, happened, maybe even a worse thing happened in this conference. Iowa State, I mean, what's Iowa State been in the Big 12? Nothing. They've not been anything. And they beat Texas Tech, Amal. This got lost in all the fodder of Charlie Strong and his, you know, press conference saying, yes, I know what this means. 66-10? I mean, they're playing football in Red Raider land.
Yeah, Klingsbury could be in some trouble, although, you know, the question always becomes, well, who do they get
enough
besides him? Who?
I mean, they got to go try and get somebody, all right? They've lost 6 of their last 7. Defense is a cuss word out there, and, I mean, it's just his ignoring that side of the ball has just, you know, it's imploded at this point. I get the whole entertainment factor. You say, oh, we're Texas Tech. We're never really going to compete for national championships around here. Let's just entertain the folks. Well, losing to Iowa State is not entertaining, and they've just been god-awful for much of the second half of this season.
You know, it would be awesome if you're Texas Tech, and I don't know what their financial situation is in that school. I don't follow them closely enough. If I'm Texas Tech, and don't laugh when I tell you this, I'm going to make a huge play, and I'm coming up with as much money as I can scrape together to convince Chip Kelly to come coach my team.
Would he bite on that, though? Certainly Chip Kelly's name is going to bounce around.
Maybe at
$8 or $9
million a year he would. And I'll tell you one thing. If you're Chip Kelly, that's got to be a conference that's appealing to you because they're playing zero defense in the Big 12. You can run that goofy offense and score
60 some
points.
And look like the biggest genius ever, huh? Score 70 every week?
And win a Texas Tech. Could you imagine, you know, he went to Oregon, they lost, he left Oregon's back to what they were when you and I were kids at this point, okay? So Everybody assumes he's going
to
fly
like, go
into
back
the rest
to the,
of you.
Go back to the really bright green and orange and yellow pants, really.
Yes, and with Donald Duck on the sidelines or whatever. But, you know, now he goes to Texas Tech and he'd be scoring 55 points a game there because let's face it. In that conference, I mean, nobody's interested in playing any defense.
Yeah, interesting. I've not heard his name as strongly for some of these potential openings lately or at least as much as I thought I would. Sliding over to the Big
Ten. Let me throw a name out there for you for the Florida State job. If either the Florida State or LSU job, depending, if Fisher stays at Florida State, I put this guy for the LSU, and vice versa. I think he could easily potentially be the Florida State guy. How about Mike Gundy at Oklahoma State? Quietly, every year, they're winning 9-10 games. He's got his team in position to win the conference. You know, they're going to play Oklahoma in the Bedlam game. Winner takes the Big 12 title. You know, they're sitting here at 9-2. Couple only real loss was the game that West Virginia beat them 37-20. I mean, the other game was the officiating game with the Central Michigan where the refs didn't know the rules and allowed an untimed play. I mean, the guy could easily be sitting there 10-1 right now.
Yeah, listen, that's a good one. That's the first name we've really lobbed up there, so I've put him down. I've got a little list going here, Emo. I think we're going to play around with this all the way till the end of the year. But I put Gundy there. I like that. Gundy for LSU and FSU, whichever one of those come open. Sliding over into the Big Ten, the two schools here that intrigue me with respect to job openings. With the job Franklin's done at Penn State, is there a chance someone tries to pull him out of there?
But, you know, yeah, I know there's this bias, and I make fun of them just because I'm up here and I like to tweak the fans. But, you know, I have Penn State alum in my immediate family. I just do it for fun. But Penn State's a pretty big job. I mean, we kind of forget that, you know, they've been away a little bit. But
I mean, he's having a great year. Can he look at this and say, look, I captured lightning in a bottle here. Maybe one of these other gigs might be where I need to be. Although he's a happy guy, he looks happy there.
Yeah, but let me flip this on you. Let's pretend Michigan and Ohio State don't get realigned and these guys in the Big Ten continue this silliness in this the way they have these divisions lined up. May I suggest to you that Penn State may be ready to displace Michigan State and send Michigan State back to what they were for much of the last 50 years since the mid-60s, which is
not the first time that I've heard you that. Not the first time I've heard you say that. Perhaps that is the case. I'm just throwing that out there as a name.
Maybe Michigan State's headed back to 7-5, 8-4ville for a while. Because remember, their rise kind of coincided with Penn State's fall from grace. You look at the rest of that division, you know, Michigan and Ohio State are going to be good every year, almost regardless of who the coach is, unless they get a complete dud. But with those two guys, they're going to be competitive every year.
I'm trying to stay focused here. So I'm going to take Franklin's name
stay
and put
focused.
It off to the side. I'm going to take it and put it off to the
side.
It might come back up later. And then the other one is Paul Christ at Wisconsin. He's done an outstanding job there. Could someone eyeball him as someone to pull on?
Now there's a guy. Yes, I mean there's a guy that I don't know how happy he is at Wisconsin because Wisconsin's an interesting school. I mean their last 15 years since Barry Alvarez was there, they've been fairly competitive to the point that they're always really good. But somewhere between 8-10 wins every year. Once in a while they'll even win a few more. There's not a lot of competition on that half of the. If you're him. You stay there and say, listen, I'm in the West here. I mean, I got to basically, even if Nebraska's good again, I got to beat Nebraska. Look at the rest
you know
of
where
the
I'm
going to
pull
Minnesota.
You know I'm gonna throw his name, Emil? I'm going to toss his name onto Notre Dame if Brian Kelly's out of there. That's just where I'm going to slide.
That's an interesting one. And that's a nice Midwest fit. He seems like a personality that, Notre Dame might like there. That's a good call. I like that.
Yeah, I'm gonna slide that one there, and then we got to figure out a spot for Brian Kelly. One of our legendary reporters down here in South Florida, Larry Bluestein, has been kind of on the side pushing the whole Urban Meyer, gonna want his dream job at Notre Dame and leave Ohio State for it. How do you feel about that? I kind of think maybe that was or is his dream job. But he has to know Ohio State's a better job than Notre Dame right now.
I think he also has to know. As good as he is as a coach, I think he's got far more opportunities because of the way he's set up to do what he likes to do in the Big Ten because of the schedules, the name recognition of teams he's playing. I think for Notre Dame playing that bastardized ACC schedule, there could be certain years where you get some matchups that aren't very appealing. I don't know. It's interesting. I mean, money talks, but I mean, Notre Dame certainly, anything they offer him, Ohio State can match. So,
yeah,
or give him more.
Thinks,
so I'm not
sure. What he thinks of Harbaugh. I wonder what he thinks about Harbaugh's tenure. Does he think it's temporary? And if he does, well, whatever. I'll just sit this thing out. I'll wait this guy out until he goes back to the NFL. Because I don't know how far I want to go in the whole recruiting thing. If this guy's going to climb trees and sleep over people's house, how far do I want to go with this thing? And if I think he's, you know, long-term, then maybe Notre Dame looks a little better. I don't know. Urban Meyer, somebody.
Let me ask you this question when we're on Notre Dame. You know, Brian Kelly, I mean, do we look and say that, you know, Brian Kelly, still you have to say he's done a fairly good job at Notre Dame. I mean, not, this year notwithstanding, generally he's put them back in the national conversation. He got them 12-1 a couple of years ago where they lost that title game to Alabama. Last year they were 10-3, losing a major bowl game to probably what might have been the second most talented team in the country, Ohio State, last year, maybe the first. I mean, Ohio State had one loss last year, and that was that close three-point game in Michigan State. In other words, Notre Dame was really good last year is what I'm trying to say. So does he get a pass and maybe get considered for an FSU or LSU
job? I don't know that
job?
It's about,
LSU
I don't know it's about the administration or the athletic director at Notre Dame. Brian Kelly himself, I'm going to say it again, he's looked distracted. And does he personally want to move on? Not Notre Dame sending him out the door.
No, I'm not saying a pass from Notre Dame. I don't think Notre Dame's going to fire him at all. I'm saying, does he get a pass from other schools saying, he just had an off season? I mean, is LSU or Florida State, whoever has an opening, looking
at a
Brian Kelly?
And you're going to hold your head on this one. I do have a place for him, and I think I'm going to save that coming up. Matter of fact, let's take a quick break. We'll come back, continue our college football discussion, because this has gotten pretty interesting right here. We'll take a quick break. When I come back, I got a place for Brian Kelly, and you might like it. We'll be back on the Gridiron Stud Show right after this.
Defeat yourself, self-rich man.
Hey, 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 do you love fantasy sports? Do you love money? Do you love excitement? Well, get ready, because you may have found your heaven. FanDuel has combined all of these great things into one amazing website. Turn your love for sports into money and excitement with 1 week and even one day fantasy leagues with a chance for enormous payouts. FanDuel pays out over $10 million in winnings weekly to its members. That's right, $10 million. One member has made over $600,000 playing in their league. Another customer entered a one-day contest for $25, and get this, cashed out $25,000 that day. FanDuel even offers a 100% money-back guarantee. Sign up now and join a league. If you don't absolutely love it, they'll give you your money back. You can enter leagues for as little as $1. For a limited time, FanDuel is offering a 100% deposit match bonus to Gridiron Stud Show listeners. That's right, they'll match your initial deposit all the way up to $200. What more can you ask for? Just head over to FanDuel.com right now and enter the promo code GridironStuds when you sign up. But you better hurry. The match bonus is going to end soon. Just head over to FanDuel.com and enter the promo code GridironStuds. Do it now!
You're talking to the Rolex wearing, diamond ring wearing, kid stealing, woo, wheeling, dealing, limousine riding, jet flying, son of a gun, and I'm having a hard time holding these alligators down. Woo!
All right, we're back. All right, we're back here on the Gridiron Stud Show, Monday edition, weekend wrap edition. It's that time of year, folks. Now is the time to get free health care insurance for you and your loved ones. Primary Care Insurance is now enrolling individuals into their Obamacare insurance plan. So call today, 954-278-8696. That's correct. Free health insurance, Obamacare, is now available from November 1st to January 31st. It's urgent that you call, though, 954-278-8696. Tell them you heard it on the Gridiron Stud Show. Open enrollment only comes once a year. This means that the government is willing to pay you for your health insurance needs. So don't miss out on your opportunity. The time to get free health insurance for you and your family is now. So please call 954-278-8696. Again, 954-278-8696. Or visit them on their website, OptimumNationalInsurance.com. That's OptimumNationalInsurance.com. All right, Emil, we've talked, we've kind of messed around with the coaching situations in the ACC, the Big 12, and the Big Ten. Let's slide on over to your favorite conference, and that's the Pac-12. You're health and safe at USC. He's gotten things turned around. You know, people wanted to pull the switch on him not too long ago. I don't think I'm going to mess with Peterson because he's not the move-around kind of guy. So, you know, maybe some opportunities come his way. His representatives feel some calls. But I don't see Peterson being the kind of guy that's just going to up and bounce around. He doesn't strike me as that type. But over there in Los Angeles, there's a team that lost in a big matchup this weekend that you've kind of hinted to may, you know, be at the end with their coach. And I think you know who I'm talking about.
Mora? Yeah, you know, I don't know. I think for Mora, let me put it this way. Here's how I could see this domino falling. I think for Mora to be out at UCLA, UCLA would have to be able to convince Chip Kelly to come coach UCLA.
You think so? That would be.
That would be I think, something that UCLA wants something to put them back in. You know, let's face it now. The last couple of years have not been good to them. USC looks like they've finally got stability in the program. For all the talk at the beginning of the year we've had, we're Helton, we thought might be on the hot seat with Lynn Swann stepping in there. You know, if anything, Helton might get a raise if he wins this next game. I mean, what a year the guy's had.
Right.
They have stability. So you're UCLA, you're saying we need something flashy. I mean, because right now you're about to go back to the back page in L.A. football if you don't, and I think Chip Kelly could do that for them.
Emil, how about this Kelly? How about Brian Kelly? How about putting Brian Kelly in UCLA powder blue and gold? Now, if he's – I mean, I kind of see that fit right there.
No disrespect. Again, you know, you're a Yankee fan, so I'll use the old Mets analogy. You know, the Mets are a nice club, but when the Yankees are good, people in New York, unless, you know, generally follow the Yankees, and that's kind of how LA is. If you're Brian Kelly, right, you really want to leave Notre Dame to be the redheaded stepchild of Los Angeles?
I think you sit there and look at the situation. Listen, though he's fared better than his predecessors on all the ones that followed after Lou Holtz, In this current climate of recruiting, I think Brian Kelly is realizing what the guys before him have realized. It's difficult to maintain at Notre Dame. You may have that one pop-up year, which he did, that ended badly for him against Alabama. But sustaining it is tough because you can't get what you need talent-wise there. And then how long do I want to stay here? Could this be the norm for me going forward? And does my coaching resume take a hit by staying here at Notre Dame? Or could I get out of here and head over to Los Angeles and try to do something there where my only real enemy is the other local team? And if I can make a dent over there and flip things around, that's a real big boost to my resume. I mean, you had some academic.
Well, not only that, at UCLA, I've said this for a long time.
At Notre Dame recently.
Yeah, you don't have to win 9, 10 games a year at UCLA. You could throw an 8-4 out there, and as long as you're not getting blown out and you beat USC once in a while, they're happy with you. So there's less pressure. Any scenario is possible, but I could see Brian Kelly. I mean, I think you're selling him short. I actually could see Brian Kelly sliding down to Florida State even if that opens up.
Sure.
Why not?
I mean, definitely a possibility.
Why not LSU? Why not LSU? They need an offensive coach. If anything, LSU needs an offensive coach. And Brian Kelly's generally been regarded as a guy who coaches offense.
I just think it's, you know, obviously they can't afford to go this route. I just think it's Jimbo or bust there at LSU, or you're going to hire Ogeron.
I don't think Ogeron's getting it. I think the end of that game cemented what LSU knows about their program. Ogeron did what Les Miles would have done. There was nothing creative by his staff in the red zone, nothing creative. You know, you got 5 trips in there, you get 10 points, you get down there to win that ball game, and that's what you come up with. I think LSU knows damn well that's probably what Les would have came up with. Maybe Les would have faked a field goal earlier in the game and won it for them. Who knows? I don't think they're going with Ogeron. I think he had to win these last 2 games to have any chance.
Yeah, it seems like he always finds himself in that situation. All right, when I jump over to the SEC, I think there's just been enough turnover there that I don't see anything else happening there. Gus Malzahn started the year off on the hot seat. I think he's cooled that off. You know, we're already dealing with the LSU thing. Texas A&M, I don't see any moves being made there unless someone can lure their coach away. So are you seeing anything that could possibly happen in the SEC?
No, I don't think so.
I mean, Butch Jones, I think, is all right. I mean, everyone was geared up for an SEC East championship. It didn't happen. They did knock off Florida. I think he has that feather in his cap he can carry for at least one more year. Things are going to get rougher for him next year without Josh Dobbs, but I think for now he's okay.
Yeah, I think the SEC, I don't think you're going to see anything unless somebody leaves by surprise.
All right, so here's what we've done here. And we could do this in sections, but we could save this and revisit it at a later date. Right now we've got job openings, all right, according to the official Gridiron Studs show, job openings, as we have forecasted. Texas, Houston, LSU, Notre Dame, FSU, Arizona, Texas Tech, and UCLA. How do we feel about that?
Yes, I think that would be it. I think that would be a fairly safe list of job openings and potential job openings.
So we'll leave it at that, and then the next time we revisit this, we start trying to throw some names in these openings. Maybe we have an additional opening we could throw in there, but we'll
what will make it easier is once the first domino falls. Once the first domino falls outside of Herman to Texas, I think then we'll have a clearer understanding of what's opened and be able to make more intelligent predictions as to, you know.
Yeah, this might be a Monday thing.
Where we're going with.
Yeah, this might be a Monday thing. Yeah. It'd be cool to look back and see, though, where we kind of threw some names around and see how close we got when the actual dominoes do fall. I think that's going to be interesting. All right, there was some NFL football played on yesterday and some interesting things that went down. You know, one of the first things I'm going to talk about, it wasn't the biggest thing, Emil, but the Cincinnati Bengals fell to the Buffalo Bills. And everyone likes Marvin Lewis. Is it the end there for Marvin Lewis in Cincinnati? Is it time to move on?
He might have run his course at this point. I mean, in this case, you know, I think not to totally excuse him, they've lost a lot of games at the end, which to me comes down to coaching and strategy. But they didn't re-sign Marvin Jones. They didn't re-sign Sanu. Both those receivers left. They gave so basically, you know. They have nothing to help A.J. Green there. Now, A.J. Green's out for the season. I mean, they did a lot of things with their roster that are questionable for a team coming off a 12-4 season. You know, and typically they've had the Bengals have been a notoriously cheap organization. So, you know, you question – I understand not re-signing both those guys I mentioned, but you have to give A.J. Green somebody to help them there. So, you know, and just – so there's some things that I can't totally put on Marvin – but he may be just getting a little stale there. I mean, they're coming off a 12-4 season, and they're basically done after 10 games. I mean, they're 3-6-1. They're not making the playoffs.
Yeah, a total disappointment, you know, from my standpoint. You know, I had them in the playoffs. I think I had them winning this division, and that's just not going to happen there. It's just not look good for them. Steelers beat the Browns. I don't know how much we can make about that there. Steelers needed to get right. Who better to get you there than the Cleveland Browns? Brown's still holding strong for that possibility to go over on the season.
Yeah, you know, the Browns are just one of those teams that game, you know, they scored to get the score 17-9. They missed the extra point, 1 of 12 on the day, by the way, yesterday. 12 extra points missed on the day in the NFL. So they do that to put a real buzzkill on a touchdown. Now it's 17-9, and then in the next offensive possession they get the ball. Their quarterback gets hit and fumbles, and the Steelers walking in for a touchdown, and it's game over. I don't know what to make of Cleveland at this
Browns
point. They
football,
might go 0-16.
Yeah, Browns football, baby. I'm going to skip over the whole Jags-Lions thing and talk about two contests here that were a little surprising. Titans have been playing great football, I guess, you know, to use this term again that you made a big deal about on Friday. They shot their load, I guess, against Green Bay because they went into Indianapolis and just weren't competitive at all for most of the game. I mean, the final score looks nice, 24-17, but they were handled by the Colts. Make no mistake about it.
Yeah, they were. I mean, the Colts jumped out on 21-0, but then the Colts kind of did what they've been doing this year. They look for ways to let them back in the game. I mean, this game got down to 21-17 at one point. The Colts eventually winning 24-17. But yeah, the Titans came out of the gate and almost took them, you know, completely took themselves out of what they like to do by falling behind by three scores. I mean, they were still able to get DeMarco Murray 21 carries in this game, but I think it, you know, that, you know, they like to play close to the vest and either play with the lead or be right in that game so they can run the ball more consistently. The Colts just own them. I don't know what to say. I think they've beaten like 12 straight times. They just own the Titans.
Yeah, and I guess there's just no other way around that. And then with the Kansas City Chiefs, come on, man. You could have the Tampa Bay Buccaneers come into town in November, nonetheless, and beat you? That's just
absolutely
ridiculous.
Yeah, that was an odd game. I mean, that was just odd. I mean, the thing with Kansas City, again, they're another team. They find ways to win. They usually do it with defense and special teams, which is fine. It's why they've been winning so much the last few years, because that stuff never leaves you. But the problem with it is they can't get enough separation in a game to necessarily pull away, and it leaves them in a lot of games like this where they can lose at the end. So far this year, they've been winning all those games, and I think this is just one that was due to go against them, if that makes any sense to you. I mean, they're every game is right there.
To me. One of the things I want to talk about here is Jameis Winston, against a pretty solid Kansas City defense, put up some pretty strong numbers that, you know, got to open your eyes here. 24 of 39, 331 yards, an outstanding day by Jameis Winston. I mean, they didn't find the end zone perhaps as much as they would have liked to, but, you know, I guess as we go along here, consistency is where it's going to have to be at for Jameis Winston. But in flashes at certain times here this season, he's shown that he could really, really be this guy. And then the other thing that he's doing, which he's always done, you know, as a quarterback, we remember this obviously in his days at Florida State, is very motivational and very good at getting guys to play, which, you know, several of his teammates on the Bucs have commented about. So an outstanding job by him. And then Mike Evans coming up with six catches for 105 yards in their win over Kansas City.
And, you know, the Bucs are right there. I mean, you know, right there. I mean, as well as Atlanta's played this year, they're a game ahead of Tampa. I mean, you know, this is a Tampa
team. Yeah, don't look
now, that,
folks.
You know,
the Bucs are 5-5.
Yeah, I mean, now, granted, I think what's kind of kept our eye off the Bucs is, other than that opening win against Atlanta, they ripped off three really bad losses in a row after that. I mean, and they, two blowouts to Arizona and Denver, is sandwiched by a game they lost to the Rams at home. But, you know, pretty much, you know, they're in the conversation. Now, they've got to get hot and beat a few good teams at some point here. They have Seattle coming in this week. But, hey, if you're a Tampa Bay Bucs fan and somebody told you after 10 games you'd be 5-5 in a game out of first place, you would have taken it.
Oh, absolutely, given what, you know, they've gone through and what that franchise has been through. Absolutely. Let's talk about the Cardinals and the Vikings. The Vikings end a losing streak that they had here, and they take out the Cardinals. Game got a little bit interesting at the end, but the Vikings dominated most of the way. Are the Cardinals done? I think they're toast in what's looking to be a very competitive.
Yeah, I think they're toast, and I'll tell you something that struck me, and I don't know if you're going to understand what I'm saying. I think you will. Do you ever see quarterbacks as they get older, you kind of look in their eyes at a certain point and you know when they're done? I get that feeling with Carson Palmer, with my man Carson Palmer. I think he's done.
Tell me what
I watched just – well, at the end of – you know, give you the example. He threw 13-10 at the end of the first half. Now, they're complaining the guy was held. I watched the play. If there was a hold, it wasn't egregious in my mind. But anyway – he throws an out on the down deep in the red zone. Xavier Rhodes picks it off, takes it 100 yards to the house. Now, even if the guy was slightly held, there was two Vikings there and one Cardinal, and he wasn't throwing the ball to Calvin Johnson in a jump ball situation. To me, it was just a bad read by him. It was a huge turning point in the game, because at worst you're going from 13 all at the half to now you just throw a pick six. Okay, it's a 10-point swing. Later in the game, I watched the end of the game. There's about a minute and a half left. They're down 30-24. It's a 4th-and-5. I think they had a timeout left. And the Vikings pressured him. He was in the pocket a couple seconds, but he just ran around and took the sack, and he didn't even throw the ball. And it just, coming off the field, he had this look of a fighter who almost like got, you know, when they got punched too much and you look and you say, okay, this guy needs to retire. that's kind of what I felt with Carson Palmer. His ball doesn't seem to have the zip on it. When I'm watching some of these long throws he's making, seems to have a little bit of that arc going on. So I just think it might be time for them.
I mean, he just keeps boxing. Maybe Carson just keeps on playing. But Carson has $75 million in the bank. He's certainly not doing this for the money. So you may indeed be right on that one. So we'll just have to see where that goes. But a disappointing year for the Cardinals nonetheless, given some of what they put together. Hey, Emil, don't look now, but the Miami Dolphins have ripped off five straight wins here. And they were dead yesterday, okay? Nothing going on. 10-0. Obviously, I was in transit. So I'm in New Orleans and trying to have a meal and halfway paying attention. And all I keep seeing is 10-0. And I just said, all right, well, the Dolphins being what they've been over the last couple of years. And then, you know, somehow I end up in the car and I see 14-10 Dolphins win. Something magical going on or what?
Yeah. You know, it may be, but I got to be honest with you. I read a funny article on Bleacher Report last night, just sitting around on my phone, and the guy said, "Listen, don't let 6-4 fool you. The Dolphins still suck."
Wow, that's the title. Not so clearly. Well, let's look at this though, Emil. They've got the 49ers next at home. Let's go ahead and stroke that one in the win column for them. So that's 7-4. It's
going
to be very hard to beat the Ravens on the road. Make them 7-5. Then we've got the Cardinals, who you said have a 66-year-old boxer out there playing quarterback.
But they still may have enough to beat the Dolphins. That's the funny thing. But, yes, okay, it's a winnable game. I get you.
8-5. Who knows what the Jets are when they take them on after that. But it is in New York, so we'll call it 8-6. Then you're at the Bills. I think their season comes down to that Bills game because we can just go ahead and say the Patriots are going to beat them at the end of the year. But I don't know.
Well, go look at the Dolphins record playing. Go look at the Dolphins record playing in Buffalo. First of all, listen, I'm happy for the Dolphins. I'm glad they're good. I mean, as far as winning games, good. You know, and they found ways to win at the end versus finding ways to lose. So that's definitely a step in the right direction for the franchise. But when you break down this streak, I mean, Ajay went nuts against the Steelers. That was a nice win for them. They also benefited by Roethlisberger tearing his meniscus in the game, but still a good win. The Buffalo game, they found a way to win that game as much as, you know, Buffalo helped them. But they won a close game there. They won a close game against the Jets. Phillip Rivers handed them a game with four interceptions in the fourth quarter, and they took it. God bless them. That's what you're supposed to do. And yesterday they played not good football against a rookie quarterback and found a way to win. So are they finding ways to win? Yes. Should you be happy your team is 6-4? Yes. But I wouldn't get carried away at myself. There's nothing dominant about what they're doing.
Stop reading Bleacher Reports. I'm going to just be positive at this point for the Dolphins. But we'll see where this goes and see where things shake out. I was less than impressed with the New England Patriots yesterday, I got to admit, even though Tom Brady put up another good stat game.
What didn't you like? I mean, it was bad weather, though. What didn't you like about the win? They went out there and did what they had to do.
Oh, you know, they're supposed to win impressively, especially coming off of a loss on primetime television against the Seattle Seahawks. I wanted to see something really major. By halftime, I wanted to see a disgraced San Francisco team, but the Patriots needed to come up with 17 in the fourth quarter to make this thing look the way they needed it.
Yeah, I hear you. I think that was just one of those games where it's a hard game, even coming off a loss, to get that interested in if you're the Patriots. I mean, I know they lost and they're supposed to do the things you said, but they read the paper like we do. They see the 49ers are 1-8. They go out there, the weather sucks. You know, it could have just been one of those games where they seemed to run blunt. He had a nice game. I mean, maybe they worked on the running game a little bit more than we would like.
That's
kind of what I expect.
Go into games and work on stuff like they're playing Northeast Washington.
Wasn't that basically what happened? Because at one point in the fourth quarter, they were up 20 points.
Well, I don't know. I'm just – culinary nodder and pray. I don't know.
You're tougher than me. Between my buzz kill on the Dolphins' five-game winning streak and you crucifying the Pats, we're brutal this morning.
You said the Dolphins still suck, man. What's up with that? Anyway, nevertheless.
I didn't say that. I read a headline that was on Bleacher Report. I did not say the Dolphins still suck.
No, I'm going to paraphrase
it. I'm
glad
the Dolphins
are playing
good
ball. Local listeners here. My man said the Dolphins still suck. What's up with this guy? We're going to get them banned.
I'm glad they're winning football games down there.
Block the streets and start marches for Emil. I mean, you just don't like the local Dolphins football team. I'm gonna have our guy call in, our Tannehill fan call in and get on your case. Anyway, Eagles, Seahawks, Seahawks continue to flex their muscle. Now, how about them off of a win like the one they had last week, coming back against the Eagles and putting up a strong performance?
Yeah, I think that's listen, the Seahawks are. I mean, we're only 10 weeks in, and as they say, that's not very long in the NFL season. But right now, I mean, you have to say the way it's looking is the Seahawks and Cowboys are on a collision course.
Yeah, it sure looks that way. Now let's get to what went down last night. Emil, I've been talking about this for the last couple. I'm going to pat myself on the back and say even when the getting was good, so to speak, for the Green Bay Packers, I saw the future. And that is, if you want to put everything on the quarterback's arm and you want to refuse to run the football, because I've seen this movie. I saw it in the 80s here with Dan Marino on the Dolphins. Eventually, the wheels fall off. Was I expecting this back-to-back weeks of giving up 40-something points? No. But this is kind of the byproduct of what you've got going on there. Your defense is on the field too long. They're getting frustrated, and you're not able to run the ball. You can't close out games. You can't just get anything done. And now they're all over the quarterback, and here's what you get. 42-24
Well, some,
on national TV.
Some of that defense, you know, they kept running the graphics with the injuries on defense. And yeah, I get that. But
yeah,
everybody's
drawing a paycheck. Why did you get those injuries?
Well, because you're on the field all the time. I mean, I get that too. And what I'm saying is, though, these guys are still drawing a paycheck. They're professional players. There was stuff going on in that game. I mean, the route Garcon ran for the touchdown. He didn't run a double move that I saw or anything. He just ran by the guy. I mean, it was like – and he didn't just run by him by a couple yards and, you know, somebody put the biscuit in the basket. I mean, he was 10 yards in the clear.
I think these guys
I'm watching this
effort.
Guy. I'm like, what?
I think they have a case of the effort, Samuel. It's like, hey, you know, whatever at this point. This whole
I was looking for my name on the Packer jersey. I was late. Am I having an out-of-body experience? Is Emil Calamino covering Pierre Garcon right now? Because that's what that looked like.
Yeah, I think these guys are tired of the whole Aaron Rodgers and the Packers thing. So they've got some major work to do there, quick, fast, and in a hurry. And if they close out the season in this fashion, just getting embarrassed like this. I mean, after the Tennessee loss, I mean, that's as embarrassing as it gets if you're the Packers organization. And you come back and do this again, you've got serious issues. I mean, you needed to respond.
How much of the game? Were you home to see the game last night? Were you
no,
home
I
to
wasn't,
see parts of
it
at least?
Yeah, I followed some of it.
Okay. Yeah, go watch some highlights. Here's what's concerning for me in this game. We could talk about defense. That's obvious. Forget that. You watch the offense. Everything's a struggle right now. I mean, Collinsworth was throwing around all his hyperbole about, oh, you know, Rodgers is getting hot now. Nothing looked easy in this game. Rodgers is in so many bad habits right now. He's throwing balls off his back foot consistently. I'm not talking about once in a while to avoid pressure. He's flicking balls with his wrist, not stepping into throws. His accuracy, I mean, here's a guy who used to be one of the best deep ball quarterbacks in football. His deep balls are not accurate anymore. I mean, they have big problems there. It's not just defense.
Yeah, everything's a mess right there for them. Real quick, Emil, I want to give you my top five, and this is something that we do here on Mondays. I'm rolling in with the New York Giants at number five in the NFL, and that's a tough one too because there's several teams that could be competing for this. The Kansas City, I can't do Kansas City, man. Not after you do that with the Bucks, just can't.
Yeah,
I can't
okay.
do it. Can't do it. So, you know, I thought about sticking Washington in there, especially off of what they did last night. But you know, let's consider the state that the Packers are in. Obviously, Atlanta's in there. They're a 6-4 football team, but they've played some tough games. And in Minnesota, but Minnesota's been dreck lately, and you know I'm gonna hold that losing streak against them, so I'm gonna roll with the Giants. Number four,
okay.
Emil, I'm gonna go with the Oakland Raiders. I had thoughts of putting them at number three, but I don't want to be that crazy about it, so I'm rolling with the Oakland Raiders, who, by the way, are just sitting here with only two losses on the season. I don't know if people really realize that the only two losses on the season for these guys, the same amount of losses that you have going on right now with the other team that I have at number three, which is the New England Patriots. Sitting there at number three, perhaps
okay.
some folks think they should be the number two team. I don't, because they got beat by the number two team that I have on this list, and that's the Seattle Seahawks, who are surging right now. And this is what championship-type teams do. This is that time of year you start putting it all together, and the Seahawks have done this over the last few years. And then there's no denying the Dallas Cowboys, who are sitting here right now with a league best 9-1 record. And again, I'm going to point it out that one loss is by 1 point in the first start ever for a rookie quarterback. There's no denying the Dallas Cowboys are the top team in the nation, in the NFL right now.
You and I have two changes only in our top five. First, at five, I'm going to put the Giants just on the outside looking in with the Chiefs and the Redskins. A couple teams right there that could just be almost in my top five, but I'm still going to put the defending Super Bowl champions in at number five, Denver at 7-3. Yes, I know they have some issues.
Even with that
quarterback
you're not feeling too much?
Nah, but you know what? It's just that defense is so good that I think you can, as they proved in the playoffs last year, if the running game gets hot, that defense, you can ride it for a while. And I think they'll clean up some of that stuff in the run game where they've been having problems. I'm going to put them on respect at number five. And like I said, Giants, Redskins, Chiefs, right there for me to get in the top five. I'm rolling with your number four at the Raiders. I'm liking them a lot. I'm rolling with your number three, the Patriots. I have to drop them a little bit, some things I don't like. Number two, I'm going to put my Dallas Cowboys at number two, okay, right now.
Oh, look at this guy. Look, I see what you're doing. Cut the BS.
No.
Come on, man.
The way they're playing right now.
Come on, stop.
No, the way they're playing right now, that's what I'm ranking this on. I'm not. If all I need to do is take the best records, I can run a report here on ESPN and say, here's the top five. I'll read you the five best records. Right now, with what they've done in their pedigree and the way they're playing, I'm going to give Seattle a slight edge. I didn't say that Dallas can't win. I didn't say Dallas might not someday be number. But right now, the way Wilson's playing, he's healthy again. I've got to put them in the number one slot for the time being.
Emil Calamino. Your team just had a big win on the road against the Pittsburgh Steelers, and in most cases where most teams would come back and just have a complete dog of a game, the Dallas Cowboys go out and handle the Baltimore Ravens. I mean, what are you trying to pull on our listeners here right now?
I'm not trying to pull anything. At the end of the year, I may flip this, and what I really want to flip is Houston in the Super Bowl. But right now, the Seattle Seahawks scare the hell out of me.
This isn't Halloween. Who scares Emil? Like, just be legit. Be straight up. The Cowboys, come on, man. Stop playing.
Being straight up.
Did you see what
the Seahawks did the last 2 weeks? They beat the Patriots.
One game,
in New
just
England.
Like Dallas.
Yes, but they came home and played a pretty feisty Eagle team and dominated them. I like what the Seahawks are doing right now. That's all I'm saying.
My goodness. I mean, what do the Cowboys have to do? Your Cowboys, what do they have to do to be the number one team? Tell us all right now. Inquiring minds would like to know.
I will rank them number one if they win the Super Bowl. How's that?
Oh, my goodness. I see where we're going with this one. That's pretty amazing there, my friend. This complete dodge. You're afraid to jinx your squad? Is that what this is?
I'm already jinxing them, putting them at number two. They never handled prosperity well the last 10 years. Are you kidding me?
Well, you know what? There you go. That's Emil Calamino for you. He says.
How did you like my Cowboys yesterday, by the way? They look pretty good, didn't they? After they got woke up after the
Apparently
first quarter.
Not good enough. They're the number two team in your top five. I'm not going to let this go, but you're just going to keep hearing about this. My God. Go ahead, jinx them, my friend. Nevertheless, all right, we made some picks on some things this weekend. Let's first talk about the fantasy football focus. Hey, you better watch out, Mr. Calamino. You better watch out. I'm rolling up on you right here. I don't have a total for you on whatever it was Adams did last night. It wasn't a whole bunch, okay? But I'm going to just talk to you
about. He didn't do much. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, I think I gave you a point on that there. I'm still trying to run it down. But nevertheless. On my end, I went with Blake Bortles. It's rare that I would take a guy from the Jacksonville Jaguars, but he's playing the Detroit Lions, so I figured he'd make some headway. He had a decent day, and from a FanDuel fantasy points perspective, put up 14.38 points. I did go with my running back as Jay Ajayi. I mean, why not? He's been red hot as of late. This is unhot as he's been, but still a decent day, a decent enough day. He didn't put up a complete stinker in the game, so – he did enough to get me 9.9 points. He rushed for 77 yards, didn't get any end zone. Probably not the greatest week to pick him, but nevertheless got him. And then I took the wide receiver Jamison Crowder, and once again did early work in the game. And then they kind of just forgot about him from there on, but it was enough for me to get 17.7 points. So, you know, you're the accountant here, but I'm going to do a little adding up, and that all amounts to, what do we got here? 41.98. Okay, call it 42 points for me in this game. Back-to-back 40-point weeks. I'm telling you, Emily, you better watch out.
I know. And by the way, just so you know, when you're counting mine up, Adams had 42 yards, so he had a probably whatever they count that as 4.2 points or something like that.
Oh, there you go. An awesome day for Adams. But good. Tell us what your guys did.
Not much. I had Tyrod Taylor. Tyrod went out and threw for 167 yards. I expected much more in that game, obviously. I thought that would be like a racehorse up and down the field game.
I kind of agree with that.
Once A.J. Well, that didn't work out, did it? Because he had
9.5 points. 9.5 FanDuel points.
9.5 points. And then I figured, you know, I figured Hill would be more of a factor. And then once A.J. Green went out of the game, geez, I said, maybe I can get something going here with Hill. Not a bad day. I mean, he had 62 yards, didn't touch the end zone. So, I mean, what did he have, 7 points, 6 points?
7.3 points there for Jeremy Hill.
And then, of course, Devontae Adams. I don't know what's going on in Green Bay. I mean, if you're not going to have a big game, I mean, the Redskins secondary just lends itself to some big games this year. But Adams did nothing. I mean, he had a couple, actually, of those 40 yards, I think 30 were on one catch toward in the fourth quarter. He did nothing all day. And corralled
yeah,
4 points.
Yeah, so 4.2 points
there. How bad?
Ends up being a 42-21 win for your boy. That's a two. Hey, I got
which puts you now in prime position. Yeah, you're 3-4, and I'm 4-3. So you one more win, and we're tied. You got to
yeah,
beat me
rolling,
again, though.
We're rolling up here. Let's talk about the NFL picks, where I think you bested me there. I took the Buffalo Bills, my lone win in this close game. We don't even know what happened there with Cincinnati, but nevertheless, I suspected something like this. Bills just playing better football. So I picked up the win there with the Bills. I went with Arizona. We talked about it. They didn't get the job done. And I picked the Packers, who laid down once again. So a 1-2 week for me. Where am I NFL-wise?
Let me get the records up here for both of us, since we have to summarize. You are 17-15 with a push. My NFL was the last 2 weeks in the NFL, I've been good, 2-1 both weeks. I took Indy. I just went with the theory they own this team, and until proven otherwise, let's roll with them. They got the win, got back to .500. I swallowed hard and took the Bears +7.5.
Good pick.
Had a feeling that the Giants. Yeah, coming off Monday night, I just had a feeling the Giants just don't win big. They're not a dominant team. They fell behind 16-6. Then the Bears remembered they were the Bears. Final score, 22-16 Giants. You're never outside the number in this game. Easy cover, though. And then finally, I took the Packers as well. They'll be on my do-not-take list probably for the rest of this season. 2-1, getting my NFL record up to 13-18 with a couple pushes.
All right, and the college football, I went with Oklahoma, just felt like they were the better team in this matchup, and I just boiled it down pretty much to that. I didn't expect such a one-sided affair, at least early on, against West Virginia, but nevertheless, I'm not going to complain. Oklahoma flexed their muscle there and got the win. Kansas State, you know I'm fond of Snyder, goes out and handles his biz, gets the win for me. And in the game I was the most confident in, UCLA – came out gangbusters, looked like this was going to be a 3-0 weekend for me, and then, you know, something happened. They remembered that they're playing against mighty USC, and they took the L there in this one of 36-14. So I ended up going 2-1. Just can't get that 3-0 in there. 2-1's everywhere, but where am I
at?
No,
but you're 19-17, and your overall record for the year between both is 36-32. You've got a push hanging off the end there, so you're doing pretty good. My college, I don't know, I just can't. You know, I took West Virginia, obviously went against you in that game. We don't talk about the picks beforehand, so I took a loss. I took another loss on Washington State. That was disappointing. I sent you a couple texts. I knew you were at the game and you couldn't respond, but I knew you read them.
Yeah.
Mike Leach continues to be entertaining. His in-game management in big games will always perplex
me.
And we'll
rules.
Have that discussion on Friday. He has his own rules, and I don't understand them. So that was a loss. And then my only win was I took the Gators +14.5 in that game against LSU. I just felt like they got all carried away in what I thought would be a low-scoring game, and it was – 1-2 in college football, 14-21 with a push for me overall, 27-39 in three pushes. You've got like an 8-game lead on me. So better have a hot streak.
Something big needs to happen here for you, Emil. Quick, fast, and in a hurry. But nevertheless, always fun picking these games, watching them. I'm really glad that you got that one win in college football, let me tell you.
I bet you are.
Yeah, very pleased to watch that win unfold for you, live and in person. Well, we're also happy that you all tuned in and listened to us here. Have a fun edition of the Gridiron Stud Show. We're here. We're arranging all of college football, and where the coaches are going to land. That's what we do. We have the power to do that here on this show. But nevertheless, good discussion on the weekend that was of college and NFL football. We thank you all for joining in and listening to it. I'm back on tomorrow at 10 a.m. Emil rejoins me on Friday. Maybe there may be some scheduling conflicts, but stay tuned. TBA to be announced on that. We'll talk about all that. No Thanksgiving show on Thursday, but again, more of that on the rest of the week. But for Emil Calamine, I'm Chad Wilson. Thanks for listening to the Gridiron Stud Show. See you guys tomorrow. Of some stranger's hand in a desperate. To all you high school recruits out there, you want to get recruited by the colleges? Step up and visit GridironStuds.com today. We got college coaches visiting. We've got people visiting. We've got fans visiting. If you want to be seen, get your video up there right now. It's easy. Create a profile. Takes 2 minutes. Stop playing games. Get off of Facebook. Take control of your future. GridironStuds.com is where you need to be today. Visit now. Set your profile up and let yourself be seen.